This is Virginia Insight. I'm Tom Graham. Shacking up. Cohabitation, I believe, is the politer term for it, but whatever you call it, for the first time in more than 100 years, it may soon no longer be illegal in Virginia for a man and woman to live together without benefit of marriage. It hasn't taken quite as long, but for the first time in more than a quarter century, it looks like Virginia transportation systems will be getting new sources of revenue. Just two of the landmarks coming out of this year's recently completed regular session of the Virginia General Assembly. If you've got questions about any of the more than 2,000 pieces of legislation that came under consideration during that session, we hope to hear from you in the hour ahead. Republican State Senator Emmett Hanger and Democratic House Minority Leader David Toscano have agreed to help us understand just what transpired in Richmond this year and to address your questions right after the news. Great to be with you. I'm Tom Graham, and this is Virginia Insight. Transportation funding, education reform, uranium mining, photo IDs for voters, gun rights, gun restrictions, abortion, texting while driving, and yes, cohabitating with a member of the opposite sex. Those are just some of the topics getting significant attention during the 2013 regular session of Virginia's General Assembly that ended late last month. So are any of these issues of concern to you, or is there something else you'd like your legislators to know? We have two state lawmakers with us this hour, one Republican, one Democrat, and if you want to talk to them, please do give us a call at 888-WMRA-TALK. That's 888-967-2825. Joining us from the studios of the Virginia Foundation for the Humanities in Charlottesville, Democratic Minority Leader in the House of Delegates, David Toscano. Delegate Toscano, thanks for making time for us.
Great to be on, Tom. Thanks for asking me.
And here with us in the Insight Studio in Harrisonburg, Republican State Senator from Augusta County, Emmett Hanger. Senator Hanger, welcome.
Thank you. Pleased to be here, Tom.
Well, so once again, any question or comment you who are listening have for our guests, we do have a phone line open for you right now at 888-WMRA-TALK, or you can post to us on Facebook where we are listed as WMRA's Virginia Insight, and we already have this post from Lawrence. Actually, looks like Lawrence has three questions here. He says, how much more will the average person be paying in taxes as a result of the transportation funding deal? When do those new taxes go into effect? What will the money be spent on? David, you voted for the transportation compromise. Emmett Hanger voted against it. So let's give you first shot at Lawrence's questions.
Well, I'll take a shot at least a couple of them. First, how much is it going to cost? Well, I think the answer to that is going to be how much you drive and how much you buy, because the part of it is going to be in terms of the sales tax increases. It's a 0.3% increase in the sales tax. And again, really what you pay in that increased tax amount depends on how much you buy. So if you if you pay $100 for some good, you will be paying 0.3% more than you do now. So you'll be paying 5.3% sales tax as opposed to 5%. Now, where will it go to? It's going to go in a lot of different places. And one thing it's going to do is it's going to increase the amount of money available for transit and rail. And for the first time in Virginia history, we'll have a dedicated source of funds for intercity passenger rail. That's over $50 million a year, and that is quite a bit different than before. It's going to at least address the so-called maintenance shortfall, where we don't have enough money for potholes. And for the first time in a long time, secondary road money will flow from the state to the localities service the roads in the localities. Emmett represents, Senator Hanger represents part of Albemarle County and part of Augusta, I believe. And I know that in Albemarle and perhaps in Augusta as well, the localities have had to put up money for secondary road funding, maintenance, and construction. And these new monies for transportation will be able to flow to those jurisdictions in a way that they couldn't flow before this bill was passed. So those are two of the questions, and the taxes will take effect as of July 1, just like any other bill, if the governor decides to sign the bill. And, of course, we won't know that until for the next couple of weeks. And then we'll get to decide whether we like what the governor has done with the bill at our reconvened session on April 3rd.
Emmett, you voted against.
Yes, I did. And it was a difficult exercise for me. I felt and had prepared early on to support an increase in the gasoline tax. It's a direct user fee, and I've on numerous occasions over the last several years have supported either efforts to have small increases in the gas tax or to index the gas tax based on efficiency in vehicles so that it would gradually increase. What we ended up happening, and I don't fault anyone on this, it was just a matter of that we have significant anti-tax forces in the state that, particularly in the House of Delegates, that are just totally against raising any tax, any time, for any purpose. And so the bill that the governor started off with was a very convoluted bill, in my opinion, and quite opposite, really, what I thought should be in just increasing a legitimate user fee where people would understand what they were paying and how much they were paying. It was an attempt, really, it appeared to, I guess, switch things around so that people wouldn't be sure whether the taxes had been increased or not. In fact, the governor on a couple of occasions had indicated we were not going to be raising taxes. The truth of the matter is, I think people were beginning to realize that we did need additional funds in the Transportation Trust Fund, and that really was, I guess, the big point that needed to be made that hadn't been made for a number of years because political candidates from both parties had run saying, oh, we need to make VDOT more efficient. We need to do all of these other things. We need a lockbox on the Transportation Trust Fund. When the truth of the matter was, we had a declining source of revenue due in large part because of the fact that of the increased fuel efficiency in vehicles. Gas tax was 17.5 cents per gallon, and you could go twice as far on a gallon of gas now as you could 15 years ago. So that was basically the deal.
And David Toscano had mentioned, Emmett, a key portion of the additional revenue stream that's supposed to be dedicated to transportation under this compromise that did pass both houses, that is the 0.3% increase in the sales tax. Also part of this, there are actually several other parts, but one of the key elements, if I understand correctly, is getting rid of that 17.5 cents per gallon gas tax completely, mm-hmm. and replacing it with what, in effect, is a 3.5% wholesale tax. Mm-hmm. So that's a little confusing, but that becomes kind of like a sales tax on gasoline, and it will naturally rise with inflation.
That's what people are expecting to happen. And there's one area where I have a concern. I think most people that I talk to, if they understand the taxes they're paying, if they feel that they're fair, they know where the money's going, they're willing to support tax increases. The problem I had with this is you never will really know, the average citizen will not know exactly how much they are paying. Based on the formula right now for indexing it at 3.5%, it was 17.5%.
17.5 cents.
17.5 cents per gallon. It will 3.5% at the rack will yield about somewhere between 10 and 12 cents per gallon. So that's actually going the wrong direction.
Well, it kind of depends on what the average price of a gallon of gasoline is. Isn't that the theory, David?
Right. It is to be indexed the first year as of February 20th of this year. And, as of today, that figure still hasn't been calculated, but it's expected to be for gasoline at 3.5%, about 10 to 12 cents, somewhere in that range. For diesel fuel, and this is another area of contention, rather than the 3.5%, 6% is the figure that's being used on diesel fuel. So people who are driving passenger vehicles and the big trucks using diesel are a little bit upset about that, 6%. So that equates to about 18 cents per gallon. Right now.
And David, just kind of one of the things that has some environmentalists upset is it a $100 fee for a hybrid car that's part of this package?
Yes. Yes, and I mean, and there's a lot that you can't like about this package, and part of it has to do with the way this thing all unfolded. As Emmett said, and I really agree with him on this, the governor's original proposal wasn't thought through very well. I mean, it was an effort to try to move things around to make it appear like you were doing something in order to solve the transportation problems, but you really weren't. And instead, what he had proposed was getting rid of the gas tax altogether, which made no sense to a lot of people. What came out at the end, and the only way to get it passed, was to accept some of the logic of the governor. So you would eliminate a portion of the gas tax, but try to raise enough money that it made sense as a package to pass. And so there's a lot of confusion of what the impact is going to be. Let's take the gasoline tax thing. If you take the governor's argument at his word, you'd say, okay, we cut 6 cents off the gas tax. We moved it from 17.5 cents a gallon to about, as Emmett said, between 10 and 12 cents per gallon. Will consumers see that at the pump? I doubt it. So they're not going to see a reduction of their gas prices. And so the governor's claim that he reduced that gas tax is going to fall on deaf ears. So there's a lot not to like, and part of the environmental community believes that this extra fee, in some cases, the increase in fee from electric vehicles from $50 to $100, and for hybrids from $0 to $100, really doesn't make sense because what you're doing is you're penalizing people who are trying to use less gas. And of course, then it gets a little cloudy because some hybrids use more gas than some conventional vehicles that are gasoline powered. That wasn't originally in the governor's proposal. It was not in either the House version or the Senate version of the bill that was passed. It ended up coming back when the conference committee, which is a group of senators and House members who get together at the end of the session to see if they can resolve their differences on this bill, inserted it back. So there'll probably be an effort to change this bill over time, and I think one place that an effort will be made to change it next year will be to eliminate that fee. It doesn't raise that much money. It's $10 million a year. It's not much money.
And as you said, this is all up in the air based on what comes back from the governor once he puts amendments on it. And then you guys look at that when you reconvene on the 3rd of April. Member of the Virginia House of Delegates from Charlottesville and Democratic Minority Leader in that House, David Toscano, is one of our guests. Member of the Virginia Senate from Augusta County, Republican Emmett Hanger, is our other guest. This is Virginia Insight. I'm Tom Graham. If you want to talk to our guests, 888-WMRA-TALK. Peter in Crozet, thanks for calling in. Your question or comment, please.
Hi. I have a general suggestion I'd just like to pitch at your guests. And that is that for every legislative committee, there would be a parallel citizens committee of some volunteers from around the state who they and you would have reason to believe have expertise on that subject, say 6 to 12 people of that size. And presumably people would volunteer for one committee only.
That actually is a good suggestion. We do have some of that, and we have quite a number of boards, appointed boards, but your suggestion to have one paralleling our standing committees or perhaps our special committees would probably have some merit. We do occasionally create joint subcommittees where we appoint citizen members to it to add a dose of realism sometimes to our deliberations.
Right. This would be sort of low impact. In other words, presumably they would meet by email and communicate with you by email and comment. They would have no power, but they would be able to comment on whatever came before the committee.
Mm-hmm.
David, you have a quick response to that idea?
Well, I think, you know, the potential exists to do something like that, actually, even if you're not formally constituted. The way email works and Twitter and Facebook, we have almost instantaneous communications from people in our districts about bills that are important to them. So I think it's good to have people weigh in like that.
Peter, thanks so much for your call. We're going to continue this conversation with Republican lawmaker Emmett Hanger and Democratic lawmaker David Toscano in just a bit more than 1 minute. Member of the Virginia House of Delegates from Charlottesville and Democratic Minority Leader in that House, David Toscano, is one of our guests. Member of the Virginia Senate from Augusta County, Republican Emmett Hanger, is our other guest. This is Virginia Insight. I'm Tom Graham. And we have this post that came in just a little while ago on our Facebook page, where we are listed as WMRA's Virginia Insight. Gentlemen, this is from Joe, who asks simply, what do you think the governor will do about Medicaid expansion? Want to go first on that one, Senator Hanger?
Sure. I had a number of conversations during the session with the governor and with the other members of the administration as we tried to put together a compromise between the House and the Senate, which would allow us to move forward with expansion of Medicaid. At the same time, we were working on reforms, and certainly I adopted the platform that we needed significant reforms, but that we should attempt to do them at the same time. If we could get certain reforms, certain agreements with the federal government as far as things we could do with our program here in Virginia that would be unique to what we wanted to try to do in terms of cost savings and efficiencies in the program, then we would move forward with the expansion and be eligible, of course, for the federal monies. The governor has made it very clear that he is opposed to expansion. But we have language in the budget which sets up a mechanism for us to move forward. And the conversations that I had with him, basically that he was reserving the right to modify or attempt to tinker a bit with the wording, but substantively I feel that we should be able to keep the commission in place that we're establishing with budget language and move forward working with the federal government with significant reforms in Medicaid and simultaneous expansion essentially so that we can provide additional services to low-income individuals and be eligible for the monies that are already being paid by Virginians to the federal government for the Medicaid program. One of the lesser known facts, I guess, about Obamacare, if you will. In fact, I'm not so sure that most of it isn't. As much money has been spent with the pros and cons during the campaigns about health care reform and Obamacare. I think really little still is known about the technicalities of it. And the truth of the matter is that Virginia taxpayers, consumers, healthcare providers will be paying to the federal government over the next 5 years roughly $10 to $11 billion, and there is a portion of that money that is a significant portion of that money, about $1.1 billion directly, that is to be paid back to Virginia to offset some of the costs of expanding and providing health care services here in Virginia. And if we don't expand, which the Supreme Court gave us that option with their ruling on the Affordable Care Act, then we're not eligible for that money. So, obviously it would be foolish just to take federal money and do things that just don't make sense. But in this instance, I think we're given a tremendous opportunity to reform the system. And in my opinion, it's going to require a concerted effort to try to bend the cost curve down on health care in general in order for us to be successful.
David Toscano with our sister studio in Charlottesville. Delegate Toscano, help me fill in some of the details here, if you could. Do I understand correctly that under the new federal health care law, as of next year, 2014, when it goes fully into effect, states that decide to opt into the Medicaid expansion will get 100% of the cost of that expanded coverage paid for by the federal government for the first 3 years, and then over ensuing years that will drop down to 90%. And in Virginia, if we opted into that additional coverage, that would mean about 400,000 more people would get health care, would get Medicaid coverage here in Virginia. Is that basically on target, David?
Well, that's pretty close to it, but there's now that we've had a few months go by, we've been losing some opportunities, and so there's some questions of how quickly we could get into the system. We may lose the first year of that 100% reimbursement, and so we might only get 2 years of the 100% rather than three.
But the thing in terms of what the General Assembly did, Governor McDonnell has been against opting into the expanded Medicaid coverage.
Yeah.
And a compromise was reached with Democrats. I guess it was primarily pushed by Democrats in the Senate, but I believe you signed on to it as well. And that was the notion that a commission would be created that was run by the legislators to both look at whether to get into the expanded Medicaid coverage, but also to call for, as Senator Hanger was saying, reforms in how Medicaid is operated.
Sure. And Tom, you know, this is very complicated. The governor's made it clear he doesn't want Medicaid expansion. He's also made it clear that the compromise that the House and the Senate worked so hard to obtain does not mean we get Medicaid expansion. The question, I think, on everybody's mind is, what is he going to do with that language? On the one hand, we've been given some assurances that he's not going to touch it. At the same time, he's now getting a lot of pressure from his conservative right to do something about that language to make it clear that Virginia is not going to accept federal Medicaid dollars, despite the fact that we're talking about in the hospital's estimates about $9.9 billion coming back to the state, the insurance of between 250,000 to 400,000 Virginians, the creation of about 30,000 new jobs in the state. He has said no, and that's probably because of national politics and his conservative base, which makes it very difficult for the governor to come out and say we're going to accept anything related to federal health care initiatives. I think Senator Hanger has it right. I mean, we have a great opportunity here to use money that we as Virginians are paying that otherwise would go to Wyoming, Connecticut, New York, other places that are accepting the Medicaid expansion. Use that money to create jobs here, to ensure Virginians here, to take some of the stress off of our emergency rooms in the Commonwealth, and create some economic activity in the form of jobs. It seems in some ways to be a no-brainer if we can combine reform and expansion, and I think the House and the Senate worked very hard on the compromise that may help get us there.
With us here in the Inside Studio, 24th District State Senator Emmett Hanger, a Republican, with us from a studio in Charlottesville, 57th District Delegate and House of Delegates Minority Leader David Toscano. This is Virginia Insight. I'm Tom Graham. We've got a phone line open for you if you want to talk with either or both of our guests, 888-967-2825. Next to Stanton. David, thanks for calling in. Your question or comment, please.
Thank you for taking my call. My call has to do with the gun issue, and this can be for both of your guests. Did the Newtown shooting have any effect at all on either of your attitudes towards gun control, specifically the repeal of the one gun per month law and restrictions on these military-type rifles and handguns? Or those of us who actually care about our children and grandchildren's safety in schools are very concerned about this and want to see something done about it, but we have been frustrated by the passage of these laws that weaken gun control. And I'd just like to know if your attitude has changed or would it have changed if this shooting had occurred in Augusta County or Stanton or one of your localities. So I'll be interested in your answer. Thank you.
David, hold on just a second, if you would. Senator Hanger, Delegate Toscano, gun legislation is an area where the two of you have differed in the past. Senator Hanger, you've been much more of a gun rights advocate, expanding access to guns. And David, you've been more of a gun control advocate. Is that fair?
Oh, I think that's pretty fair, and I think part of it has to do with the nature of our districts. Senator Hanger has a much more rural district, and mine is much more urban. But if you would permit me to take a shot at this first and then let the senator weigh in, is that all right?
Oh, sure.
Sure. Well, you know, my perspective, I don't really think my views about gun violence changed that much in the aftermath of Newtown, because even though it was so dramatically different in the sense that you had very, very, very little children being killed, you've had a whole series of these things over the last 10 years, you know, everything from Virginia Tech to Aurora, where people come in and, you know, with these weapons which have, you know, substantial rounds of ammunition attached to them, and you can fire them off really fast and kill a lot of people very quickly. You know, that dynamic really hasn't changed, even though the targets changed. It made it much more troubling when Newtown took place. You know, I voted against eliminating one gun a month, an act that had been in place in Virginia for 20 years. I voted against that last year. I have consistently supported efforts to limit the number of rounds you could have attached to a weapon. Again, the theory being that one can support the Second Amendment right to bear arms and right to hunt without having these 30 to 100 round magazines attached to a sophisticated rapid fire weapon. You know, I have supported instant background checks, which have been consistently frustrated in the Virginia legislature, even though I think the polling indicates that 80% plus of Virginians would like more rapid instant background checks for the sale of all weapons to keep them out of people's hands who are either criminals or have mental disabilities. We did do some things. I mean, we did put some more money in the budget. I think Senator Hanger can speak to this because he's on finance, Senate Finance. But we put some more money that will allow schools to put better security in place and perhaps hire some additional resource officers. So, you know, a lot of our urban school divisions already have resource officers that are in school to help not only protect people but also interact with youngsters who might have other kinds of problems that might lead them into gang activity and criminal activity. But I haven't changed my mind very much, and I'm not sure a lot of people did change their minds very much. I think they tended to see that incident through their already pre-existing lens. You know, I think that's unfortunate, but that's the way it's been.
I would tend to agree on that. I don't think my thinking changed, although it's one of those things that causes us all to reflect and to think seriously about the status of our society. And indeed, we live in a very violent country right now, and it's unfortunate. And I really don't have a good handle on where we need to go with this. So there are certain things that I felt were inappropriate as just reactions to this terrible incident. Just a couple statistics. Drinking and driving. On a daily basis, you know, I think there were 26 people who died at Newtown, and on a daily basis in our country, 30 people die on our nation's highways as a result of drinking and driving, drunk driving on our highways. On a daily basis, every day, year in and year out, about 80 people die, 80 people from guns in this nation. Half of those, roughly half of those, are self-inflicted. But there's my point being, there's a lot of violence, and when we saw, you know, that terrible instance there with children involved, everybody thinks, well, what can we do? And sometimes when we do things as a reaction to a terrible thing like that, we may end up doing the wrong things. Even if we get carried away with the notion of arming people in the schools, of putting additional officers out there, is something that bears a significant cost, and we have to examine that in the overall scheme of things as far as what taxpayers are willing to pay and some of the root causes of the violence. Lots of issues with mental health, and that's one of the areas that we worked on this past year. I felt, and I've long been a supporter of the Second Amendment, but I felt some of the public response by gun groups, particularly the NRA, were maybe a little bit overboard in terms of trying to turn attention away, because there is a real problem, not with so much with people exercising the right to own and bear arms, but there is a problem in our nation with extremism. Now, whatever the right, whatever the issue, we find on both sides of the political spectrum, people resorting to extremes in order to perfect what they think is their right to do things, which are sometimes counterintuitive to where the mainstream public wants to be. So I don't see that my opinions have changed, but it's something that we all need to be careful about as far as going forward and exercising appropriately our rights so that we don't lose those rights.
In terms of specific legislation, Senator Annemiek Hanger, do I understand correctly that, Governor McDonald did propose something for significantly increasing penalties for what's called so-called straw purchases, where somebody who can legally purchase guns does so and then turns around and gives them or sells them to someone who wouldn't otherwise be able to legally purchase guns? Do you recall that legislation?
The didn't make it all the way through the process, no. There were a couple of things, well, more than a couple of things. There were a number of initiatives. The governor had some initiatives, and I think there are still some work in process. The governor appointed, one of the previous callers talked about commissions or people, citizens being involved. The governor appointed a couple of commissions, well, one broad commission, then a subset of that commission dealing with mental health issues and its ramifications for gun violence and some of the problems. And some of those, during our session, the timing wasn't such that we could react to all of the work that they were doing. So there probably will be additional pieces of legislation in the future as a result of the work of that commission.
David, thank you so very much for your call. We have here with us in the Insight Studio 24th District State Senator from Augusta County, Emmett Hanger, a Republican. With us from the studio of the Virginia Foundation for the Humanities in Charlottesville, 57th District Delegate and House of Delegates Minority Leader David Toscano. If you want to talk to either of them, we've got a phone line open for you at 888-WMRA. Talk, 888-967-2825. David, give me just a second because there are some shy people who may not want to call in, and I need to let them know that you're welcome if you'd rather not call us to post a question or comment on our Facebook page, where we are listed as WMRA's Virginia Insight. Delegate David Toscano.
Tom, I just want, before we lose this, leave this topic, I think Senator Hanger made reference to something that, we really need to focus a little more on here. And I know Senator Hanger's been involved in this because he's interested, very interested in mental health issues. When we talk about gun violence in the country, it's not just all about Aurora and Newtown. It's also about suicide, and particularly teenage suicide. Because there are a lot of guns out there that people have access to, it's a little bit easier to do. Now, you don't need a gun to commit suicide, but it makes it a lot easier. And we've got to get some better help, especially for adolescents who have a hard time of it in trying to deal with their problems, and adults who potentially might take their own life through the use of a weapon like a firearm. And that's going to take some money, and it's going to take a lot of effort. But it's effort and money worth investing in for the sake of the future of our citizens.
Emmett, is that an area where you and David agree?
Yes, definitely. It certainly is.
We are going to hit the break pretty quickly here. So I wanted to ask you both about another area, Emmett, you had mentioned school safety related to schools, and that was the whole package of education reforms. We'll get to that in the next segment, as well as hopefully a question or comment from you there listening. If you are willing to call us at 888-WMRA-TALK, or post on the Virginia Insight Facebook page. And it looks like Ron in Harrisonburg may be our next call when we get back in a bit more than 1 minute. Former member of the House of Delegates, but since 1996 serving in the Virginia State Senate, Republican from Augusta County, Emmett Hanger, is one of our guests. Former professor of sociology and former mayor of Charlottesville, current member of the Virginia House, Democrat from Charlottesville, David Toscano, is our other guest. Mr. Toscano also serves as minority leader in the House of Delegates. Big package of what he called reforms proposed by the governor this year. Many of them passed. David, what do you think?
Well, I think the governor was trying to create a legacy in two areas. One was educational reform, and two was transportation. You know, some of these things came at us so fast that they really needed a lot of work, and they kind of got pushed through the process, and they're going to need more work. But there are a couple of areas that are worth discussing. One was this notion of interjecting more accountability into local school divisions through this A through F grading pattern that was imposed through this new statute that was passed. I think it remains to be seen how that's going to work and how the schools are going to implement it. There are a lot of people who are concerned that that will be used as a kind of a club to hold over teachers' heads because they'll blame the teachers for how the schools get evaluated. The second item is this notion that you could create a state-controlled school board that could take control over failing schools. And rather than having local school boards operate schools in their jurisdictions, the state would then assume control of them and make changes personnel-wise, curriculum-wise, to bring the schools back to performing levels that are acceptable and then return the schools to the local divisions. And the third piece of the reform package really has to do with private tax credits to support private schools. And these are all been fairly controversial, and we can talk about them, the pros and cons, in more detail as we go on today, if you want.
Emmett, how significant is it that part of this reform is to increase the length of time that the new teacher stays on probation, I think from 2 years to 5 years?
Well, some of that was changed, and I would say, you know, David, Delegate Toscano, perhaps he would agree with this. Sometimes it's easier to make your points when in some of these difficult areas when you're working with an administration not of your own party. The governor is a friend. We're both Republicans, but I had some significant disagreements with some of the policy issues in the education package, and as a result, it was not just me. I think it was somewhat of a bipartisan project, if you will. The legislation did not go through the assembly in the fashion that it was originally submitted. Particularly with the teacher contract bill, which was changed significantly from last year, and actually when it ended up, the teachers groups by and large supported it, and I think it was an appropriate piece of legislation. The grading of the schools, I did not support. I thought it was one of those. You look when you're looking to improve anything, you look for best management practices wherever you might find them, And obviously all the states look at each other to see who's doing what and who's better at what. My opinion, we're doing an extremely good job in Virginia with our public education system. Not that we don't need improvement, and there are lots of areas where we can improve, but some of the changes that were being proposed, I felt, were simply a bit off the mark, particularly the school grading system and the statewide, and I might add, we do have a problem with performance in some schools. You're always going to find, across the board, that you're going to have the schools that are extremely successful, and obviously in any endeavor, you're going to have those that are at the bottom rung. That when you rate them, you're going to have those at the top and those at the bottom. Well, for those at the bottom that were not performing to the standards that we had hoped to at this point, there was a proposal from the administration to have a new entity created that would basically take over the administration of these schools. Had a bit of a problem with that, and we ultimately ended up passing some legislation, but through the budget, we ended up focusing it just in one area of the state, in Petersburg, where we have some schools there that have had some trouble over time, and we've had private contractors in there working with them. So I think the governor, he had his mind and his heart, I believe, in the right place on some of this, but we had just significant differences of opinion about how to reform some aspects of our education process.
Next to Bazy Vitale, thank you for joining us on Virginia Insight. Your question or comment for Senator Emmett Hanger and or Delegate David Toscano, please.
Yes, I've got a question and a couple of comments. Then I give my answer off the air, if you don't mind.
Okay.
My question would be the taxes that you guys propose to increase, like sales tax especially, and part of the tax going to go to cover like a railroad expense. So the railroad is going to be like in a couple of cities, maybe big cities, and out here in the country, we're still going to have to pay taxes for it. Did I understand that correct?
Senator Hanger, I guess what he's saying is that since everybody is going to pay this increase in sales tax that goes to transportation, the funds that are being used for rail and other parts of the state may not benefit somebody. May not benefit somebody in Basie.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly, right. And may not benefit most of the state. But that you can comment on that later. And a couple of comments. First of all, about the guns. I mean, right now you have to get a background check. I mean, instant, I don't know about that, but it doesn't take very long anyway. So, I mean, it's kind of a lie. And plus, if you guys going to vote for registration for the guns, think about the communists. They did that, then they confiscated, then they killed a lot of people. So
okay, Vitaly, we've got several thoughts from you and maybe not time to respond to all of them and still get to other calls, but I do want to thank you for calling. And let's go to his first comment, if we could, Senator Hanger, with you, this idea that transportation projects that I'm going to pay for are going to benefit other people but not my community.
That can be a valid question. In the legislation that was passed, it's only a minor percentage of the funds that are going to be allocated to rail or mass transit, if you will. But I would suggest that it does benefit us all. You know, I live here in the Valley, but I have children in Northern Virginia. I travel to Northern Virginia. So we all benefit in some ways from the ability to move people around in a more cost-efficient manner. One of the areas where I do totally disagree with the legislation that was passed, and it was probably the biggest reason that I disagreed, and I'll just mention it briefly now. If we have time, I'll get back to it, is the use of general funds. The transportation bill that was passed not only increased the sales tax, which is a general fund, but it was also going to directly take from the general fund, which typically is used for education, public safety, and other services, a couple $100 million per year. It also proposes to take the collection of sales tax from the internet sales, which is an extremely growing area, and allocate that to transportation as well. So the sum total of movement in the bill actually is heavily weighted toward the general fund. If you take the amounts that are coming from gas and diesel over a five-year period, actually end up less than they are currently at the 17.5 cents per gallon level. So the small amount that's going to rail, I don't think should be a big issue, but there are major concerns that I do have with the legislation that was passed.
David, your sense of this concern that I'm paying taxes in one area, but it's benefiting other people in the state, not me?
Well, I think it is a legitimate concern. I think that's part of the reason why we've had a hard time getting this any kind of package passed. The rail component of this is relatively minor. I mean, you're talking about a package that raises over $1 billion a year. The rail portion of it's $50 million. But beyond that, when you invest in places in the Commonwealth, which are the economic engines of the Commonwealth, like Northern Virginia and Hampton Roads, and you will allow more businesses to take advantage of the transportation network that gets goods and services all through the Commonwealth, up and down the valley, across the southern portion of Virginia, through the Southwest, that raises all economic boats. And you take a place like Northern Virginia, about 34 cents out of every dollar in sales taxes that goes to Richmond and then comes out to fund the schools throughout the Commonwealth of Virginia is derived from activity in Northern Virginia. So we have to make sure that we invest appropriately to keep that region economically competitive. And we are a commonwealth. We rise and fall as a commonwealth. Even though something may not appear to be directly beneficial to somebody in some part of the state, it's going to have ripple effects that are going to affect us all, and I think will improve the economic viability of the commonwealth.
Next to Harrisonburg, Ron, thanks for joining us on Virginia Insight. Your question or comment, please.
Hi, I don't want to beat a dead horse, but this is a pretty important hot topic, I believe. And I just wanted to make a comment. Since Senator Hanger brought up the comparison with drinking and driving with gun deaths. Drinking and driving was deemed unacceptable by our society, and we passed legislation to curb that, and we have outlawed drunk driving. Because of that, and it has saved countless tens of thousands of lives. So something that if you're going to make a comparison, you might make it all the way. And the second thing I would just add is that without trampling on the rights of citizens to bear arms, I can't go out and buy a bazooka or a tank, even if I want to. And nobody's up in arms about not being able to do that. I just wanted to make those two comments. Thank you.
Okay, Ron.
I think his comments are fair there. I didn't mean to compare the two. It's just to state that we've almost been desensitized in our nation to the loss of human life. We accept it, and it's a part of our daily routine that people are going to die as a result of our actions, whether it be driving on the road or our use of firearms or drugs or whatever. We unfortunately perhaps do not place enough value on human life in general.
We have this question on Facebook from Joni, who asks, is it true that renewable portfolio standards for electric power created by Dominion Power have been destroyed instead of being fixed? David Toscano, do you know?
Well, it's kind of a loaded question. We've had what's called voluntary renewable portfolio standards in Virginia for a number of years. And embedded in those standards have been all of these enhancers for the use of solar energy, the use of nuclear, the use of this, that, or the other alternative energy resources. This year, the General Assembly made an effort to cut out some of the things that they didn't think really had any more effect than just raising the rate levels for electricity in the Commonwealth. And so what we have now is a diminished voluntary renewable portfolio standards. And the only additional, incentives are for, as nuclear and wind. The feeling is that solar is starting to compete on its own. That being said, I mean, there is an argument, and I think you'll see this in the gubernatorial campaign, that we ought to have mandatory standards, that we ought to make sure that our utilities provide a certain percentage of the electricity we use from renewable resources. They have a lot of mandatory portfolio standards in a lot of states around the country. And some people believe, and I think the Democratic candidate for governor, Terry McAuliffe, believes that we should have mandatory portfolio standards in Virginia. I do not think the Republican governor candidate, Cuccinelli, believes that to be the case. So I think you'll see a sharp distinction between those two candidates on this issue.
Well, as long as we're almost touching on environmental issues, and we've got almost 2 minutes left, Emmett, the environment, there was some significant movement in this legislative session that did not get a lot of attention, particularly concerning the Chesapeake Bay.
Right. I had the opportunity this past year to chair the Chesapeake Bay Commission, which is a group of policy makers from Maryland, Pennsylvania, the District of Columbia, and Virginia. And we are basically working with the EPA and making good progress, in my opinion, on cleaning up the bay. But we have what is called a WIP, or a Water Improvement Plan, or Water Quality Improvement Plan, that we have submitted to the EPA. We have TMDLs, which essentially is our pollution diet. We're only allowed a certain amount of pollutants that we can legally put in the waters, and we're under a diet, or if you will, or have goals in order to clean up the bay to improve the quality of the water and improve the fisheries. And we're basically doing that. We've embarked over the last roughly 10 years on a significant upgrade of our wastewater treatment plants. I had legislation this year, and the governor actually worked on that as well. And we have money now in the budget for the state's portion of funding, $110 million roughly over the next couple of years for upgrading our wastewater treatment plants. Two major pollution areas from stormwater in Richmond and Lynchburg, where they have combined sewer overflows. We have monies available to do that. I worked along with Delegate Sherwood from Winchester on legislation to combine our water programs under one agency, the Department of Environmental Quality, and we partially accomplished that, which is hopefully going to save some money and give a better work product as we move forward in cleaning up the streams that flow into the Chesapeake Bay.
And David Toscano, in the few moments we have left, there is something else that has not gotten much attention, which you think is kind of a good thing, new stuff that can go on at the DMV. Can you tell us about that quickly?
You know, some people think going to the DMV is like going to the dentist or a root canal, because in terms of the lines you get. But there was a little bill passed that I think might make it a little bit easier for folks to get their vital records, whether it's birth certificates, marriage licenses, divorce decrees. And you can get them at the DMV beginning July 1. You'll have to pay a small fee. But, you know, this becomes a full-service operation where you go get your license plate, and if you need a vital record, you get that too. And that's a little bit different and maybe more customer-friendly than the Commonwealth has been in the past. A little bill.
And, of course, all bills that haven't yet been signed by the governor are still subject either to his veto or his amendments. And then you guys go back and see how you're going to react to that on the 3rd of April. So we'll have to have you back sometime not too long after April Fool's Day. Our guests have been 24th District Virginia State Senator Republican from Mount Solon, Emmett Hanger, plus 57th District House of Delegates member Democrat from Charlottesville, as well as House Democratic Minority Leader David Toscano. Gentlemen, it's always great spending time with you. Thank you so very much.
Thank you, Tom.
It's great. Thank you.
Thank you for tuning in for this edition. I'm Tom Graham. Hope we can get together again soon for more insight.